This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
This is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us with Dale Campbell. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy holiday season to you, from our family to your family. It's a pleasure to be here. I totally did not just run in from an ad break there. That's right. I'm playing Christmas music. I did have to leave the studio after the last segment. Everything I say there is true. And at to end the show, we will be doing a little bit of housekeeping. But until then, let's talk about everyone's favourite. That ended it plumply. That ended quite quickly, actually. I wasn't expecting that. So, now let's analyze negative gearing. Not entirely negative gearing, actually. I shouldn't say that it's entirely about negative gearing when it's not. This article written by Karis Chang says, you can't blame people for being confused. One minute, we are told there's an apartment glut. Okay, can we note, that's the second time today that the word glut has come up on the show. A rare treat, glut. And house prices could crash any minute. The next, our leaders are calling for negative gearing changes that will push prices down even further. So, are we headed for a housing Armageddon or not? But before that, let's get to kind of an interesting bit of audio. With an even interesting title.
The Amarok Highline.
No, it's not about that motor vehicle that aren't officially sponsors of the Generic Live Show at all. What? A car that costs $53,990 drive away with $2,000 cash back? Anyway, move on.
Your fault you can't afford to buy a house because of your hipster avocado-loving lifestyle.
Okay. Hey, wait a sec. Hang on. Our avocado-loving hipster lifestyle? I didn't know that it was because of hipsters. I didn't know that hipsters liked avocado. I like avocados. Also, this lady is crying over avocados. I'll continue.
Let me start by saying I really like Bernard Salt. I think he's really on the ball, except not at all when it comes to these massive intergenerational issues going on in Australia. In his column over the weekend, he made a lot of points about young people in the housing market, and one of them, which is going completely nuts on social media, is that if they didn't buy so many $22 breakfasts, they might be able to afford a house. Now, I'm simplifying, and there's so much wrong with this, I just don't know where to start, but here we go anyway. It's not that young people can't be bothered saving for a house or that they're not saving, it's that they've given up, and here's why. Wages growth in Australia has been flat for years, and that's okay because inflation has been very low for years as well. That means that things in relation to the amount of money we have haven't really gone up that much in value. But then over here, we have houses in Sydney and Melbourne. Let's talk about them. Before you tell me to move to the outer suburbs, which is something that I get told a lot, have a listen to the house price growth numbers. Now remember that these are the entire large cities, not just the latte-sipping, avocado-loving inner suburbs. Houses in Sydney and Melbourne have been going up in value by between 10 and 15%. In the 12 months to mid last year, Sydney house prices were up almost 19%. We're talking 64% in 4 years. What that means is that if first home buyers save 15% of their income, all they're really trying to do is keep up with the price inflation. If they save 30% of the average Australian income, which is $75,000, that's $21,000. If they're really good. Now cut that in half because of that price inflation and you're left with a little over $10,000 to save for a deposit of around $150,000 or more. See what I'm saying? Experts all over the world, by the way, are saying that Sydney and Melbourne house prices are overextended and due for a correction. So where does that leave young Australians? It leaves them nowhere. They are saving, but the thing that they want is completely out of reach. Older Australians who own maybe one, two, three houses each, they've been telling younger Australians to get out into the outer suburbs, the really outer suburbs, or the regional hubs, because that's where houses are cheap. Thing is, 30 years ago, the places where houses were cheap were still pretty easy to get to the city from, and younger Australians still need to be at work at 8 or 8:30. So the public transport and infrastructure really needs to step up its game if we're going to make that work. So younger Australians are living at home with their parents longer, living in share houses longer. And so when it comes to something like a $22 avocado breakfast, that's a pleasure that we can afford. Even if we did pocket that, do you really think it's going to get us closer to the massive, massive deposit? I don't think so.
That is Chris Kohler there. He makes some good points. Now, I've been to Melbourne, talking about that last hour, but they are, let me tell you, they are a whole bunch of latte-sipping avocado lovings, but there is nothing but a good, there's good avocado smash sandwiches there. That's so good. Anyway, that's not the point here. The point is, there is some really good food in Melbourne. That is the point. That's the real point of this segment. Excuse me, there's some really good food in Melbourne. But anyway, so the point is that there it's expensive in Melbourne. I can tell you that for sure. Not even just looking at house prices, just in general, Melbourne is expensive. And he's right. The infrastructure for out of suburbs and regional hubs do need to step up their game if young people are to work in the city. Now, if I know me, and I am a country boy at heart, but I've been living in a quote unquote city for coming up on 11 years now, but I know how hard it is to work in a city. I couldn't imagine myself working in a highly populated city of I'm in a regional city. Before you send your emails to genericliveshow@gmail.com, ding, got the email address in. Before you send your hate mail there, I am in a quote-unquote regional city as opposed to a quote-unquote regional town. So there's the diff. The point is, I can't imagine myself working in that city environment, but I know some people who do. So I can kind of see where people are going with that. So I can see how people do love that lifestyle. That's for a particular demographic. Is that a demographic that's dying though? That's one thing that video doesn't address, the dying demographic of that. So who knows? That's just comments. Back to the real story. Prices are too high. Housing prices have been rising for over a decade, and warning about property bubble has been brewing for years. One of the latest warnings came last month from property analyst Lewis Christopher of SQM Research, who said national property market was overvalued by 22%. This is prices being driven in Melbourne, which is the highest over-evaluation of all by 40%, and Sydney, which is the second highest over-evaluation at 40%. Also, because why not? Mr. Christopher warned that the changes weren't made, such as lifting interest rates or tougher restrictions on house landing prices in Sydney and Melbourne, will continue to rise up 16% in 2017. Quote, however, it's likely 2017 will be the last year of price falls generated by the mining downturn in these cities, he says. Mr. Christopher said if interest rates were cut again, these prices would rise even further, paving the way for a possible correction in 2018, which, by the way, I think interest rates will rise in 2017. I think there's no way that they cannot rise in 2017. I think that 2016 has been too sort of even and flat. We can't have that again in 2017. I don't think we can live in a flat economy in 2017. But there isn't a part, but there's good news or bad news. I don't know what any of this means. So we're working through this together, but there is an apartment glut coming. I just want to, again, I want to celebrate the fact that there's two articles on the run sheet this week that contain the word glut. At the opposite end of the spectrum, there are fears that construction of new apartments would lead to oversupply in the next few years. The construction boom has already seen to be impacting Melbourne apartment prices, where there's been a record levels of building in the last 2 years. On Thursday, CoreLogic's November Hedrick Home Value Index showed Melbourne dwelling prices have fallen 1.5%. Head of research Tim Lawless attributed this to new units coming onto the market. Prices fell by 3.2% last month. Overall, prices in Melbourne have only gone up 3.9% this year compared to 12.2% in houses. But this is where things get really interesting for Sydney. While Sydney unit prices are not increasing as fast as those of houses, they're still rising. In November, unit prices rose 0.9%, which is actually higher than 0.8% achieved by houses. Across the year, unit prices grew 10.6% compared to 15.3% for houses. Earlier this year, Bischapelle released a report predicted Melbourne would have an oversupply of more than 20,000 homes in 2017, but Managing Director Robert Miller said Sydney was still suffering from an undersupply of housing. Odd. It's so severe, we won't see an oversupply in Sydney for the next 4 years, Mr. Miller said. A downturn in Sydney in between 2004 and 2012 was so severe, basically only the last 12 months we've started to see construction above the level of demand, unquote. Sydney is different. Sydney is very different. We'll skip ahead here a little bit because we are heading towards a break. These apartments are looking for investors rather than new home buyers. Blah blah blah. The housing market is still hot. So, AMP Chief Economist Shane Oliver said New South Wales must think there's some extra capacity in the property market, as the state planning minister probably won't be talking about negative gearing if the market was weaker. Quote, they're probably thinking there's still a little bit of room in the market, but it's not altogether clear that the market has peaked, unquote, he told news.com.au. They're probably thinking there's a long way to go. I'd be cautious. I would think the supply glut would hit next year, he said, unquote, he says. However, if prices did fall, Mr. Oliver said the market could be propped up by two types of buyers. First home buyers may re-enter the market, especially if houses fell by 20% and interest rates remained low. And that would also open up for investors. But the AMP chief economist said you won't be looking for a fall of like what happened in the US or Eurozone. So they changed negative gearing, is the question posed by this article. By restarting the ban on negative gearing, New South Wales is basically trying to push some of the responsibility for fixing house affordability back on the federal government. While Mr. Oliver believes the supply is more connected to affordability, this does not mean some charges shouldn't be looked at, especially the capital gains tax discount. It's a bit of a distortion, and that's why negative gearing is so profitable. But Treasurer Scott Morrison doesn't seem to be taking the bait, and said on Friday that abolishing negative gearing would hit mum and dad investors in retail properties, pushing rents up and putting immense pressure on the market. So it's a little tricky there. Stamp duty is something that New South Wales government could change to help first home buyers, but is left untouched, which, by the way, stamp duty, I think the best thing that any person could do is to cut stamp duty. Stamp duty needs to be waived for first home buyers. I think it was here in the state of Queensland for a brief period of time for first home buyers back when we were trying to stimulate the economy. But for me, the housing market depends on if you're buying or renting. Now, renting here locally where I am, no places to rent. The rent demand is the supply, none. Zero. Zilch. So, it's something that It's something that needs to be looked at. And a lot of these new units are going up for sale. But whether people can afford it to be sold or not is a whole nother story. There you go. Now, the article finishes it off by saying, we should be content to live in a society where it's easy for one person to reduce their taxable contribution to schools, hospitals, and other critical government services, though generous federal tax exemptions and the ownership of multiple properties, while a generation of working Australians find it increasingly difficult to buy one property to call home. And there's the problem. This country does, particularly through its negative gearing, particularly does favour those investors and those bigwigs. And we need to... I'm not necessarily having a moment of, we need to take down, we need to go to those investors and burn them down with pitchforks. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that that's definitely something worth looking at. You know, definitely going to them and saying, you know, we need to make it fairer for everyone. Fairer for across the board. So not necessarily those people at the top, maybe giving incentives to those at the lower while keeping investors happy. You can do two things at once. Two things can happen at once. So, just saying. It's an interesting article. Sorry I couldn't get through it all the way, but I think Melbourne and Sydney, they definitely do need to figure out what they're doing with that sort of stuff. They do have a tough time on their hands managing the properties and managing how properties are controlled and, you know, how you balance that supply and demand while investors are nabbing up all of these new properties. So, fascinating. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, apparently there's an iPhone calendar scam going around. We can tell you how to stop it. Stop the iPhone calendar scam right here on GLS. Up next. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell on a Sunday. It's 11:22. Whatever the time of day, whatever the time of the night, we're here to serve you a big dose of genericness with your host, Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. It's a pleasure to be here. We are pulling out the holiday music. Happy holidays from our family to your family here on the Generic Live Show. We are heading into the final month of the year. It's the holiday season. It's the season to be joyous. Now, clear your schedule, because next, clear your schedule, everyone. I have an important announcement to make. Do I have announcement? Can I get announcement music up? How quick can I do this? Announcement music. I can't do this quickly at all. Announcement, sound effects. Come on, Dale. Come on, here we go. Announcement. What am I, boarding an aeroplane? What is this? What? I have no idea what that was. What was that? Can I have that again? Sorry. Announcement. Dale, pull it back together. It's your show. Take it back. Take it back. So next Thursday, you, the iPhone user, has an all-day appointment for... No, I can't read this straight face. I can't read it with a straight face anymore. You have an all-day appointment for $19.99 Ray-Ban sunglasses. Have no idea what I'm talking about? Consider yourself lucky. Over the past month or so, a few iPhone users using Apple's iCloud calendar have been a target of spam attacks. Spammers send invites that are automatically added to calendars. You're blaring notifications at 9 a.m. informing you that 50% off UGG boot sales are about to start. It's fake. Come on. These spammers are exploiting what is supposed to be a convenience feature for the iPhone users. When someone schedules a real actual meeting, it automatically shows up in your calendar. Don't worry, your iCloud account isn't being compromised or hacked when this happens. So, there you go. Consider yourself lucky there. This is just like an email scam, except there's no special folder that it can be dumped in since Apple doesn't have calendar filtering or blocking system in place. Quote, we are sorry that some of our users are receiving spam calendar invites, unquote, an Apple spokesperson said. We are actively working to address the issue by identifying and blocking suspicious senders and spam in invites being sent. Until the Apple fix is ready, we have some things that you can do to prevent these pesky notifications.
Sick of getting hit with spam calendar invites on your iPhone? Recently, spammers have started targeting Apple iCloud accounts by sending invites with fake sale information that auto-adds to your calendar. Tip 1. Don't decline the invite. Declining actually can notify the spammer that your account is active, meaning you could end up with even more annoying fake appointments. Tip 2. Turn off Apple's iCloud calendar if you rely on other calendar services like Google or Exchange. On your iPhone, head to Settings, iCloud, and then switch off Calendars. Tip 3. If you use the iCloud calendar, you can send invites to your email so they won't be automatically added to your calendar. Visit iCloud.com in your browser. Select Calendar, then the gear icon in the lower left, then Preferences, Advanced, head down to Invitations, and click Email to your address. None of these tips are foolproof, but Apple says it's working to address this issue by identifying and blocking suspicious senders. Until then, remember, there's no such thing as $20 Ray-Bans.
That is actually true. There is, trust me, I know, there is no such thing as $20 Ray-Bans. If there was, it definitely, do send an email to genericliveshow@gmail.com about $20 Ray-Bans, legitimate ones. I'll be very, very interested. But until then, yeah, I don't have an iPhone, so this really doesn't impact me at all, but I do know some people that do have iPhones that it would impact. So I, you know, it's a public service announcement that, you know, I'm doing it for you. As we continue here on the Generic Love Show, I feel like before we finish the segment, we do need to hear that again, because that is really the gift that keeps on giving these days. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Well, 2016 has claimed yet another victim. We'll tell you who it is as we continue. Thanks for joining us. It's 11:30. Miss a minute of the Generic Live Show. Find us on Blog Talk Radio. Just search Generic Live Show and listen. This
is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell for a Sunday. That's right. Getting in the holiday spirit just makes you want to sing along. Hey, GLS, GLS all the way. What fun it is to host a one-man open show. Hey, I can't sing. Anyway, thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. We are getting in the holiday spirit this year by playing Christmas music. Bumpers. Happy holiday season from our family to your family. It's good to be doing shows in December, so it's good to be here. We're sort of holding down the fort, actually, over the holidays. We'll get to that in the next segment, what we're doing over the holiday break as well, because we are having a little bit of a break from live shows. We are going to be doing pre-produced shows coming up here in a little bit, so a little bit of a break from the live shows, but no biggie. But we'll tell you more about that next segment. 2016 has been definitely, as we look back at the year, has definitely been a big year in terms of people that are sadly no longer with us. And this year, and this week, rather, is no exception. The Big Mac inventor dies at 98. Nearly 50 years after creating the Big Mac's iconic burger. You probably don't know his name. You can almost certainly divulge his creation. Two beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. Michael James, Jim Delgetti, the McDonald's franchisee who created the Big Mac nearly 50 years ago and saw it become perhaps the best-known fast food sandwich in the world, died on Monday in his home in Pittsburgh. Delgetti, who according to his son ate at least one 540-calorie Big Mac a week for decades, died at 98. Demand exploded when Delgetti's sandwich spread to the rest of his 47 stores in Pennsylvania and was added to the chain's national menu in 1968. Quote, he was often asked why he named it the Big Mac. He said, because Big MC sounded too funny. Okay. His son, Michael Delgetti, said, however, McDonald's in 1985, honored Esther Gilkeston rose for coming up with the name of the burger and presented her plaque enriched with a likeness of the best-selling sandwich and french fries between the golden arches. She was a 21-year-old secretary for the company's advertising department in 1967 when, as the story goes, a harried executive dashing to a board meeting asked her for a name nomination. Jim Delgetti's family disputes that Rose came up with the idea. The company didn't immediately clear up the dispute when contacted on Wednesday. Delgetti told the Associated Press in 2006 that the McDonald's resisted the idea because its simple lineup of hamburgers, cheeseburgers, fries, and shakes were selling well. Quote, they figured, why not something else if the original menu was working so well, Delgetti told them. McDonald's had sold billions of Big Macs since then, and it's more than 100 countries. When the burger turned 40, McDonald's estimated for selling 550 Big Macs a year. That's roughly 17 a second. Delgetti received no payment or royalties for coming up with the burger, the company said. What? Wow. Okay. Is that by his request? I have no idea. Big Mac, quote, has become an iconic sandwich enjoyed by many around the world, unquote. Ann Duggan, a former assistant to the Dean of University of Pittsburgh Cuts School of Business and an expert of business franchisees, said that Jim Delgetti's genius was simple. He listened to what customers wanted on a bigger burger. Quote, in franchising, there's always a set playbook, and you have to follow it. Jim saw an opportunity to go outside the playbook because he knew the customer, unquote, Duggan said. He preserved and McDonald's listened. And the rest is history. So for you, for your listening enjoyment, we have a very, very brief history of the McDonald's Big Mac. You can clearly tell them, no, I'm not living in the sunshine for your lipstick ad that you're playing that is pink in the middle of a forest. I'm so confused right now at this ad. What is even this ad? And I doubt if raindrops fall with hearts, she's going to put that on her face. Why is she putting that on her face? Finally, a lipstick that loves you back.
Okay, let me show you how McDonald's builds a Big Mac sandwich.
There are few foods as iconic as McDonald's Big Mac. The burger was created in 1965 by Jim Delagatti, a McDonald's Corp franchisee in the Pittsburgh area, and originally served up in 1967 at one of his outlets. It went national the next year. We all know the ingredients.
To all these patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, all the sesame seeds,
the Big Mac recipe hasn't changed much over the years, but the price has, originally costing 45 cents. It's now up to around $5. The Big Mac was seen as revolutionary, breaking away from the basic burgers and fries of most fast food chains. And it didn't take long for the double-decker to become McDonald's flagship menu item.
Come sink your teeth into a McDonald's Big Mac.
Ads for the cheeseburger are also among the most iconic marketing campaigns, sometimes enlisting top-tier names like Michael Jordan and Larry Bird in 1993.
What's in the bag?
Lunch. Big Mac, fries.
Play you for it.
And in 1970, McDonald's even created a Big Mac mascot named Officer Big Mac.
Do you think Ronald will make it to McDonald's in time?
The Big Mac also had an on-screen role in Morgan Spurlock's Super Size Me. The 2004 documentary follows Spurlock's 30-day journey eating only McDonald's food.
This is probably the first time in a long time that I've actually seen a Big Mac that looks like the picture.
In recent years, the Big Mac's allure has faded, as McDonald's has struggled to entice customers back from rival chains perceived as healthier. In fact, only 1 in 5 millennials has tried a Big Mac. McDonald's recently announced that it's testing both a larger and smaller variation of the burger, called the Junior Mac and Grand Mac. Whether those succeed or the Big Mac remains, it will always be remembered as changing the landscape for burgers to come.
Wow. Okay. You have been informed on the Big Mac. Next hour, the Whopper. Oh, wait. There is no Whopper. There is no next hour. Oh. Hey, well, was it the... No, the Quarter Pounder. We did the Quarter Pounder in the Great Burger Debate of 2016. That's right. That's right. The Big Mac was considered... for the Great Burger Debate, but then was shunned by the Quarter Pounder. That's right. Huh. We need to do the Great Burger Debate again. That was fun. But the point is, 45 cents for a Big Mac back in the day? Oh, could you imagine? That's nothing. And yeah, it's right. It's $5 now. That's American, too. Here, if you want a Big Mac meal, it costs like, for a large one, it costs about like $14, I want to say. Yeah, but, oh, I love a Big Mac. I am in that 1 in 5 millennials, by the way, that has tried a Big Mac. I do enjoy a Big Mac. I do enjoy McDonald's in general. Huge McDonald's. Huge McDonald's eater. Strange. I do like McDonald's. It's everything that you want from a burger in just one bite. It's just a shame that the Big Mac couldn't get its time to shine in the Great Burger Debate of 2016, but there you go. An end of an era. The inventor of the Big Mac just if he can't survive 2016, I have no idea who will. Meanwhile, if you're cooking up a storm this festive season, forget aioli. This is the tagline according to the Food Safety Council is advising people to buy commercially made aioli and mayonnaise this summer to avoid food poisoning. Huh? It's better not to make these things yourself because there's issues associated with the eggs, spokeswoman Rochelle Williams said. Recipes for creamy condiments include... I just thought of a double entendre that I am not saying out loud. Can my life get any worse? Can potentially... I shouldn't laugh at this next part. Which can potentially contain deadly Salmonella bacteria. And let me tell you, Salmonella food poisoning is guaranteed to ruin Christmas. It does cause severe diarrhea, vomiting, fever, and abdominal cramps. In people with weaker immune system and in young children and elderly, they're the vulnerable groups. As temperatures rise over the next 3 months, there will be a number of food poisoning cases in Australia. Quote, the hotter the day, the increase in the bacteria activities, Miss Williams says. Ideally, people should ditch the apron and buy their aioli and mayonnaise from commercial businesses with a good reputation. There are an estimated 4.1 million reported cases of food poisoning in Australia each year, and relevant to 1 in 6. Miss Williams says the good news, though, is that it could be avoided by following food safety rules. And there's apparently a nice little informed package to tell us more about that when it comes up. Sitting in the sunshine. You can avoid food poisoning by sitting in the sunshine, apparently. There's a few of them. The important thing that everyone can stop, it will reduce the likelihood of food poisoning, is good hand washing, she says. The basic rule is 20-20. So you wash your hands for 20 seconds, you dry for 20 seconds. So here is, we're going to go a bit over time for this, but here is how to shop, cook, and store this festive season.
This is Brian. Bacteria like Brian love food. But your food doesn't love Brian.
And neither does your health. When shopping, pick up dry foods and household goods first. Things like canned fish, rice, lentils, and toothpaste. Brian is not interested in these. He's not too bothered by fruit and vegetables either, so collect them next. Brian loves meat, seafood, and dairy, but only when they're warm. He hates the cold, and he can't handle the heat, so it's important to choose hot and cold items last. Otherwise, they may end up at Brian's favourite temperature, above 5 degrees Celsius. Make sure you keep your hot and cold foods separate. Or as your cold foods warm up and your hot foods cool down, you'll find yourself taking home some unwanted passengers. This is Bobby. Bacteria like Bobby will find their way onto foods that aren't stored right. Bobby hates the cold, so keep your fridge below 5 degrees Celsius. To stop Bobby from spreading himself around, organize your fridge correctly. Always store cooked foods and raw foods separately. Store raw foods in sealed or covered containers at the bottom of the fridge. Keep raw foods below cooked foods, to avoid liquids such as meat juices dripping down and bacteria contaminating cooked foods. Otherwise, the bacteria from the raw meat might contaminate your dinner, and that increases your chances of food poisoning. And remember, a crowded fridge prevents cool air circulating. If you store your food properly, the bacteria will have nowhere to hide. This is Billy. Bacteria like Billy love to hang around while you're preparing and cooking food. To keep him away from your dinner, defrost food safely in the fridge or use the defrost setting on the microwave. Always avoid putting thawed meat back into the freezer, otherwise you risk taking Billy with it. Make sure you use different knives and boards when preparing food, keeping raw meat separate from other foods. This stops the spreading of bacteria like Billy. Your food should be fully thawed before you cook it. And you should always check your food is cooked all the way through, or you may just find bacteria hiding in your food. And always remember, the number one way to keep bacteria at bay is by washing your hands. This is Bernie. Bacteria like Bernie love leftovers. He will find his way into your leftover lunch unless you look after it properly. Leftovers can be kept in the fridge for 3 to 5 days, or you can freeze them straight away. When freezing your leftovers, make sure they're labelled. That way you'll know what they are and whether they're still safe to eat. Food can be frozen for up to 3 months. Bernie hates the heat, so when reheating food, even big dishes for parties, make sure it's hot all the way through. It should be hotter than 75 degrees Celsius. If you're taking food to a party or gathering, don't invite Bernie. He'll ruin things for everyone. Make sure you transport food safely, keeping your hot and cold dishes separate. If food is at room temperature for longer than 4 hours, don't eat it. You can guarantee Bernie will be lurking. And remember, avoid preparing food if you're not feeling well. If you're sick, you might be carrying bacteria or viruses that can make food unsafe. You can avoid food poisoning. Shop, store, cook, and eat safely.
Authorised by the Victorian Department of Health. 50 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. Spoken by Rosalind Oates.
That's a good message to take away this Christmas. Some of the images there. Well, yeah, that was all animated and cute. Some of the images of that, those bacteria. Oof. You do need to see that. I might make that the clip of the week. That is actually very important heading into this festive season. There's a lot of food being cooked and a lot of food being prepared, and yeah, there's a lot of food going around, so it is important to look after yourself and your food, because again, a lot of people having Christmas lunches, work parties and all the rest of it, so do look out for you and yourself and everyone around you. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, we've got some housekeeping notes to get through, but to round out the show today. Nothing special, nothing exciting, just housekeeping. Heading into the end of the year. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, thanks for joining us. It's 11:52. Whatever the time of day, whatever the time of the night, we're here to serve you a big dose of genericness with your host, Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. It's a pleasure to be here. As always, we are breaking out the Christmas bumpers, and it's a good chance to say happy holiday season from our family to your family. I never get tired of saying that, by the way. Just want to put that out there. I always enjoy saying that, because it's Christmas. It's the holidays. It's festive time. As I bump my microphone over, it's festivity. It's fun and it's festive. And with Thanksgiving gone and then now it's the holidays, it's just one big massive joyous spring. And as I've said this episode, and I think I'll be saying it not next week, but definitely the week after, we will, it's something to hold on to, and it's that sense of belonging. And like I said earlier in the show, if it wasn't for you guys out there listening and the support that I've gotten, 2016 wouldn't have existed. This show wouldn't have existed in 2016 if it wasn't wasn't for you guys, definitely for the support that you guys have given me. Now I wanted to do some housekeeping, just to catch up, just to sit down and say hello, just to check in. So I do make a joke in a couple of things. I do make a joke during the show that I have to at least get one shout out for the email out in context. We do have an email, genericliveshow, all one word or lowercase, @gmail.com. Genericliveshow@gmail.com is the email address. Feel free to send your MP3 files there to have them played on the show. Brief is better, but if they are longer form conversations, we can have that in the bigger segments as well. We do have that flexibility, but shorter is better for those little briefer segments, because we can just easily slot them in there and have those bigger segments reserved for those bigger topics that do break throughout the week. So that is housekeeping point number one. Housekeeping point number two, this is the third last show of the year, which is probably how I've gotten so flustered. The last live show, normal live show, will be on the 18th of December. That'll be the last regular live show. Christmas Day, we will be doing a show. Christmas Day show is still going ahead from 10 a.m. to 12 midday, Australian Eastern Standard Time. That's GMT plus 10. So you can do the math on that one. I think that would be from 9 till 11 p.m. Christmas Eve, Eastern Time, US. So that show will be occurring, but that won't be a normal show. That won't be a normal show as you know it, per se. So that'll be, because it'll feel different. We'll still have news stories, we'll still have fun, but it won't be a regular in its regular time slot. So that's Christmas Day. So the last show of the year will be the 18th of December. The 25th will be the Orphans Christmas, so stay tuned for that. The Orphans Christmas is a concept. Is that live show will be followed by lunch that'll be served from 12 onwards. So we will have finger food, as well as other items as well here at the house, and people are welcome to come to my house. Details are on my Facebook page as well. So that's something there. The best of 20 after that on the 1st will be the best of 2016 for the show. Now, that will be a 2-hour show. That'll be everything from the year. That'll be everything from 2016. I am planning to have a 2-hour show for that one. Putting together that show, this is what makes me so starting to put together a show this week. The best of show, that is what's making me so heartfelt. That'll be pre-recorded. Then on the 8th, airing in this time slot on the podcast feed, will be the biggest stories of 2016. That will be pre-recorded. That'll be on the 8th of January. Then on the 15th of January, also pre-recorded, airing in this time slot on the podcast feed, will be the prediction show of 2017. And we will return with live shows from the 22nd of January. So the regular time slot shows, regular live shows, will be stopping from the 18th of December through the 22nd of January, where we will have our roundup of the year. Orphans Christmas 25th, best of 2016 on the 1st of Jan, biggest stories on the 8th, predictions on the 15th, and back into live shows for the 22nd. We'll be taking a 2-week vacation from the 12th of February through to the 26th of February. We'll be taking 2 weeks off. Then I've got another project I'm working on around that time, plus that's when school goes back. We'll be back on the 26th. So from the 12th to the 26th. So the 12th and the 19th of February, we'll be off for 2 weeks. So the 12th and the 19th of February will be off. So that'll be a two-week vacation in February. Just to work on other projects. I've got a lot of other things that planned for 2017, but I want those 2 weeks, particularly the last, that'll be the last 2 weeks of my summer vacation. So I want those 2 weeks definitely to work on some school stuff and to work on other projects as well. So that's what that is. We will be back for 2017. We're not going anywhere. GLS, we've had too much fun this year to go anywhere. So we're not going anywhere in 2017. GLS will be back, but we will be taking, we'll be taking 2 weeks vacation in February 12th and 19th. There will be no shows on that week, those weeks. That is of February. Well, thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It feels so weird to be just going out like that. Thanks for joining us on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. We'll see you all next week with our second last show of the year. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It's 11. Nope, it's not 11 anything. It's 12:02.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AM Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.